Well, if you have access to Bibles, I'm going to invite you to turn to the Gospel according to John. And I'm going to invite you to stand for the reading of God's Word this morning, or this evening. Gospel according to John, beginning in verse 1. I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version. We find these words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.' From his fullness, we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. We invite you to be seated. Now what follows, some of you may say, this feels like deja vu. I think I've heard this before. And if you've been here long enough, that will be true. For one reason or another, as I prepared to preach tonight, it was a sermon from last December that kept coming back to me. And you know that this is a rarity for me. I've only twice in my 4 years here preached a sermon more than once. The prophets of the ancient Hebrew people have told us a story. It's a story of creation. They've told us that in the beginning, the universe was dark, empty, chaotic, lifeless. And into that darkness, words were spoken. And the words were spoken by a being of light and life. We call this being God. And the words he spoke were these: "Let there be light. Let there be heavens in the midst of the waters, and let them separate water from water. Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together, and let dry ground appear. Let the dry ground put forth vegetation. Let there be sun, moon, and stars. Let the waters teem with creatures. And let birds soar above the dry ground through the heavens. Let the dry ground bring forth living creatures." And finally, then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over all creatures." But humanity has forgotten this story. I found the opening monologue to Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy to be helpful in creating space for us to understand what has been happening. The world is changed. I feel it in the water. I feel it in the earth. I smell it in the air. Much that once was is lost, and none now live who remember it. And some things that should not have been forgotten were lost. History became legend. Legend became myth and passed out of all knowledge. Some of you remember that opening. In many ways, this is where humanity now finds itself, having forgotten the truth about ourselves and our world. History has become legend. Legend has become myth. And the memory of our Creator and our creation has passed out of our conscious knowledge. The Christian philosopher and linguist C.S. Lewis, in one of his books in the Chronicles of Narnia series, a book called The Silver Chair, described a quartet of creatures who became trapped in an underground city in which there is no breeze, no sun, no sky. Those who live there have lived there, it seems, forever, and they don't know of the existence of such things. And the only light in this city was from lamps, and it was ruled by a beautiful but malevolent witch. And yet these four creatures whose names, and these are Lewis's names, not mine, were Puddleglum, I had to write them down, Eustace Scrubs, Jill Pole, and Prince Rillian. These four remembered the sun and the wind and the sky. They had been there, at least they thought they had. But those memories were dangerous to the witch and to her rule. So she began to question their recollections. Her desire was, through powerful magics, to bring them under her spell, under the spell of the underground city. And here is Lewis's description of her deceit. This comes from The Silver Chair. Then came the witch's voice, cooing softly like the voice of a wood pigeon from the high elms in an old garden at 3 o'clock in the middle of a sleepy summer afternoon. You know a British person wrote that. That's highly specific, isn't it? And it said, "What is this sun that you all speak of? Do you mean anything by the word?" "Yes, we jolly well do," said Scrub. "Can you tell me what it's like?" asked the witch. Thrum, thrum, thrum went the strings on her instrument. "Please it, your grace," said the prince, very coldly and politely. "You see that lamp? It's round and yellow and gives light to the whole room and hangeth moreover from the roof. Now that thing which we call the sun is like the lamp, only far greater and brighter. It giveth light to the whole overworld and hangeth in the sky." "Hangeth from what, my lord?" asked the witch. And then, while they were all still thinking how to answer her, she added with another of her soft silver laughs, "You see, when you try to think out clearly what this sun must be, you cannot tell me. You can only tell me it's like the lamp. Your sun is a dream, and there is nothing in that dream that was not copied from the lamp. The lamp is the real thing. The sun is but a tale, a children's story." "Yes, I see now," said Jill in a heavy, hopeless tone. "It must be so." And while she said this, it seemed to her to be very good sense. Slowly and gravely, the witch repeated, "There is no sun." And they all said nothing. She repeated in a softer and deeper voice, "There is no sun." After a pause and after a struggle in their minds, all four of them said together, "You're right. There is no sun." It was such a relief to give in and say it. "There never was a sun," said the witch. "No. There never was a sun," said the prince and the marsh wiggle and the children. The Christian scriptures have told us that only a fool says in his heart, "There is no God." But today, in the halls of education and intellectualism of our culture, what was once revealed as foolishness has become the very beginning of wisdom. For the prophets of Israel who wrote the book of Proverbs, the fear of the Lord was the beginning of wisdom. But for the sages of our day, it is the denial of God that is the mark of the truly wise and the truly free. In Lewis's The Silver Chair, the witch needed the four creatures to forget the sun and their other memories of the real world so that she might rule over them. And today it is the memory of God himself and his incarnation in Jesus that humanity, it seems, wishes to forget. Perhaps so that we humans can take God's place as chief among creatures. Hear Lewis's description again, but this time in more contemporary terms. "Then came the voice of human reason, cooing softly like the voice of a wood pigeon, and it said, 'What is this God that you all speak of? Do you mean anything by the word?' 'Yes, we do,' said a student. 'Can you tell me what it's like?' asked human reason. Thrum, thrum, thrum went the strings. 'Please it, your grace,' said the student very coldly and politely. 'You see that child? She lives and breathes and moves and chooses very much on her own. But she did not begin that way. She began as two cells in the bodies of her parents, and then as an embryo in her mother's womb, and later she was born into the world. She's not the source of her own life. She received her life from another. Life itself, too, is not the source of itself. Life, too, like the child, has a source, a creator. We call this creator God. If that is true, then where is this God? What is the source of that sort of being? Asked human reason. And then while she was still thinking how to answer, it added with another of its soft silver laughs, "You see, when you try to think out clearly where this God must be or from whence such a being would come, you cannot tell me. You can only tell me it's like a parent. Your God is a dream, and there is nothing in that dream that was not copied from humans. Humanity is the real thing. God is but a tale, a children's story." "Yes, I see now," said the student in a heavy, hopeless tone. "It must be so." And while she said this, it seemed to her to be very good sense. Slowly and gravely, human reason repeated, "There is no God." And the student said nothing. It repeated in a softer and deeper voice, "There is no God." After a pause and after a struggle in her mind, she said, "You're right. There is no God." It was such a relief to give in and say it. "There never was a God," said human reason. "No, there never was a God," said the student. If God had remained silent, and if we had remained in our city underneath the earth, humanity would never again have remembered who we are or from where we had come. But God did not remain silent. As God had spoken reality into being in the very beginning, God spoke to a Middle Eastern man named Abram, who he later named Abraham. And God continued to speak to Abraham's children, first to Isaac, then to Jacob, and then to Joseph, and then to Moses, and then to Joshua, and then to the prophets of Israel, and even to some of her kings. And God commanded them to retain a record of the life of their culture with God. And for nearly 1,500 years, they wrote and rewrote, reflected upon, and interpreted their history with God. And the result of those 1,500 years of generational effort are the first 39 books of our Christian Bible. But then again, God fell silent, and Abraham's children began to forget, as the world around them had long forgotten who they were and from whom they had come. Until once again, somewhere between 2020 and 2022 years ago, God spoke again. But this time, God did not call out to a human being, as he had with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, nor did God work miracles to deliver his people from a more powerful and oppressive nation, as he had done when he spoke to Moses and delivered the Hebrew people from slavery to the great nation of Egypt. Nor did God simply send prophets to reinitialize the repressed memories of his people, as he had done through the prophets and the kings of Israel. No, this time, God himself entered into human history personally. God himself became flesh in the person of, by all outward appearances, a common Jewish man, a carpenter from the small town of Nazareth. This man's name was Jesus. We celebrate again his birth in the small Judean town of Bethlehem tomorrow. And in the life and ministry of Jesus, humanity again began to awaken. Our lost memories restoring as God himself pitched his tent among us. Later in the Gospel of John, in chapter 14, John tells us that Jesus taught his disciples this way. John 14, beginning in verse 1. "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, so that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way to the place where I'm going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you know me, you will know my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. Jesus healed diseases. He cast out unclean spirits. He restored sight and hearing and mobility. And he spoke again words that began to remind humanity of all the things we had chosen as a people to forget. But many did not want to remember. And so to cling to their darkness, they killed the source of their life and their light. And they are doing it still. And God has allowed it. God allowed us to kill him while he lived amongst us in the flesh. And he allows us to put to death his memory still. But a few days later, after he had been crucified, over 500 eyewitnesses claimed that he had risen from the dead. Over 500 eyewitnesses over the course of 40 days in various places and contexts claimed to have interacted with him alive. And while many were gathered around him, he ascended into the heavens, promising to return. History records many who died for that testimony, but history records not one single recantation. Not one person who testified to these truths said it was a lie. All of them who were pressured to death died for the story they told. This experience was so real, so visceral for them, that they forsook their families and their cultures and their beliefs, and many their very lives to share the story of the existence of the God of all creation, who they had met somehow in the flesh of a man who had been crucified by the Roman government, buried in a tomb, and 3 days later rose to new life. A person who had ministered among them for 40 days, resurrected from the dead, and then ascended into the heavens right in front of their eyes. Their lives were so changed by these events that they remained faithful to this Jesus amidst marginalization, persecution, some of them torture, and for many of them death. And in them, humanity had remembered who it was and from whom it had come. And as their testimony spread throughout the nations of the earth, countless numbers committed themselves to the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, who had become flesh in the person of Jesus. Humanity was remembering. Humanity was awakening. And it was for this purpose that one of Jesus' apostles, a fisherman by the name of John, recorded the words that we have been reflecting on tonight in his biography of Jesus. Towards the end of that book, which we call the Gospel according to John, in chapter 20, verse 30, he says this: Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the chosen one, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. But it has been many centuries since these eyewitnesses gave up their lives for the one they knew to be the God of all creation. And again, the world has changed. I feel it in the water. I feel it in the earth. I smell it in the air. Much that once was is lost, and none now live who remember it. And some things that should not have been forgotten were lost. History became legend. Legend became myth and passed out of all knowledge. And today, somewhere around 1,980 years after he ascended into the heavens, and some 5,500 miles away from the place the crowd who watched him ascend had assembled, we now read the words of another biography of Jesus in the Christian Bible, words found in the Gospel according to Mark. Words according to Mark spoken by Jesus as assurance that he, that God, would one day once again enter into human experience and be accessible to human senses. These are the words of Mark, but about in the mouth of Jesus. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in the heavens nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It's like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight or at cockcrow or at dawn. Or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. Jesus knew the disciples to whom he was speaking were awake because he had awoken them to who they were and from whom they had come. So he implored them, no matter how long it was between the last time they encountered him and the next, to keep awake, to keep telling his story and the story of the Hebrew people he had chosen, to keep living out the values and the ethics that he had taught them, to keep relying on him for their forgiveness and for their freedom and for their transformation, to keep praying, to keep loving, to keep forgiving. And perhaps today, thousands of miles and thousands of years from that day, we too might hear his voice. Some of us have heard it and have followed. And to us, he says, keep awake. Don't lose hope. Don't grow weary in doing good, for your faithfulness will be richly rewarded. But others of us cannot remember the sun. We've long forgotten who we are and from whom we have come. But even those who have fallen under the spell of the darkness, who have been sleepwalking through life, who have no conscious memory of God, and for whom the testimonies of Jesus have become legend and myth, even if that's you. If you listen to the deepest part of yourself, you might hear him too. And to you, he says, wake up. Wake up. And keep awake. God was here in the beginning. God has been here through human history. God became flesh in the person of Jesus, and God is coming again to make all things new. We needed these witnesses to tell us their testimony of life with God over so many centuries and millennia. They've told us much that without their testimony, we would have had no opportunity to know. But we do not need them to tell us that there is a God in the heavens. That knowledge is buried deep within each of us. It has been entrusted to us. And try as we might, we cannot rid ourselves of it. And when we read their testimony, we don't so much learn as we begin to awaken. And if you feel this truth somewhere deep inside, if you feel an old repressed memory that you have desperately tried to put to sleep, stirring within you on this Christmas Eve, if you somehow feel beyond feeling his voice calling tonight, can I invite you to join us in following Jesus today? He has told us again who we are and from whom we have come. He is our past. He is our present. And he is our only future hope. When we come to Christmastide, the church has long realized that this is a season in which we celebrate the coming of the light back into a world that had snuffed out that light, a world that did not want to know itself, that did not want the truth to be known, that wanted to pretend that we could be gods on our own, that we can care for ourselves, that we are the ones who write history, and if there ever was a God, we made him, and we can kill him. That's the story that humanity is telling itself, and Jesus came to put it to sleep, to remind us again that we are not gods, that we are creatures, made in his image, made for his purposes, but made. And maybe again, as the darkness descends again on our part of the world, we might pray that this would be a day of awakening. because humanity is again falling asleep in the West. After thousands of years with the gospel, we are telling other stories and living into other truths. And like has happened every time in human history, the gospel flourishes somewhere while it decreases in another place. And as it has been setting here, it is flourishing in Asia and flourishing in Africa. And we have become too good for it. But today is a day of awakening. For the light has come into the world, and the darkness will not overcome it.